This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
Bruh.
Bro, what's up?
Bruh. Dude, so you know how sometimes you wake up with a perfect plan and you're like, I'm going to kill it on this plan today. So I woke up today. Yeah, right? I was going to get this feature shipped today, right? I woke up this morning, internet's out.
Oh, no.
So me having absolutely very rampant ADHD, my morning doesn't go right. My entire day is foobar.
Yeah.
So internet comes back on, right? Talking to my project partner. I was like, do you want a pair? We can get this done real quick. I'm almost done. It's just the final little piece. Okay.
Famous last words.
I said that at 9 this morning. It is 12:49, the moment we were recording this. And I have been on the phone with him pretty much the entire time up until recently, trying to figure out the stupidity of whatever is going on today. It's been one of those days where you have all this really complex logic. And the more and more you look at it, the more you're like, does this even data?
Mm-hmm.
And the more you look at it, you're like, no, something's definitely wrong here. And we pulled in our designer and our designer's like, you're right. That is really weird. Let's just cut out part of this feature. In a Figma document, he just swiped away like two little inputs. And I'm over here like, this is amazing. But on the other hand, I just spent 2 days working on those freaking things that you just deleted. And it was not easy. They were writing in React. I had to write Jest specs. That was a troubling time.
Oh,
but
sure.
I was happy with it. I had worked hard on this thing. I'm happy they're gone, but I'm not happy that if we had done what we are now doing, I would have been done on Wednesday and we would have been had this shipped. It's no one's fault. It's just ugh. I feel like this has been happening a lot to me.
Yeah. Oh, I can really relate to that. That feeling comes and goes so often. This should not be this hard to do whatever.
Yep.
And it is. It's
it
still
always
that hard.
Is. Yeah. Always.
I'm actually not 100% sure. I don't know why this was happening. But one of those moments this week, I like published a guide on GoRails and then made an edit to it. And then the edit never showed up. And we have fragment caching around the guides. And so it should see the update of that was changed and it should render the new version of it. But it turns out I never specified a cache store. So it's using the file cache store in production. Because we don't really use caching very much.
Right, right.
Or need it really at all.
It's a blog.
So yeah, it took me like a while and I was, what in the heck is going on here? For one, I'm pretty sure the file store should be able to handle that case, though. The update of that should be fine. All we do is the cache view helper and the guide do and the block. And so I have no idea why it wasn't detecting the new version of that guide and rendering a different copy of it. So maybe the file cache store doesn't actually use that in the cache key. I'm not sure. But it was definitely one of those moments too this week that felt similar where you're like, I just did how long trying to figure this thing out and I moved it to a different cache store. I had never intended to use the file cache store anyway.
I got one better. On this same feature that I worked super hard on Wednesday, something's not working. I could not figure out why. I'm trying to add debug statements. I don't understand why this isn't working. I don't understand why my debug statements aren't getting hit. I do not understand. I'm getting really frustrated. I'm banging my desk with my fists like an angry person. And then I just happen to think, I switched over to my terminal. The JavaScript server had died. Process had exited.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm refreshing. And I was like, oh my God.
I did that this week where the Tailwind process was failing to recompile my changes because there was a typo and I'm refreshing the page. What is going on? Why is there not the change that I just added? Did I do it wrong? Is it the wrong selector? Is it whatever? No, it was a CSS file that had a typo in it and yeah, it couldn't recompile, so it was just serving the old one. Maybe that should, if it fails to compile the new version, it should delete the current build of it. It wasn't successful or something, but when those secondary processes are either not running or failing and don't cause everything to blow up with an error, then you get a lot of wasted time. Yeah.
Why though?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was like, damn it. If I had been in NeoVim, I would have seen this faster because I would have been in Tmux and yada, yada. And I was slowly but surely the march on time.
Yeah.
Just like kind of want Rails to tell me, but I understand why Rails didn't tell me. But at the same time, I wish Rails knew that this was happening, that this process had despawned. Right. Like I could do my own thing, obviously, but it was ugh.
Yeah. You're running the process just manually instead of Foreman or Overmind?
I use Evermind.
Oh, and Overmind didn't shut down everything else? Doesn't it normally?
I have it set so that one process dying doesn't kill the whole thing. Because if I have Stripe or Sidekick, use Overmind Restart Worker or something. We run services that don't stop the app from running. But
yeah,
I don't want the whole Rails app to not work if Stripe isn't working. If I'm not using Stripe and might not be authenticated or something.
That happens in the Jumpstart code base. If you like turn on Stripe, we'll add the Stripe CLI to the proc file for development and whatever it is, 60 or 90 days, the authentication expiration is set to. So like, you'll boot up Rails one day and it'll just crash and Overmind will be like, yeah, we just couldn't do anything here because Stripe wasn't logged in or something. And it does feel annoying to deal with that. That reminded me of, I need to set up Mailie Search to be booted as part of the test suite. So we like run it with Foreman for development, but we also need Mailie Search running when we run our test suite, and we should have a little thing to boot that up and shut it down when the test suite finishes or fails or whatever. That would be handy.
Does that not make your test super slow?
No, not really. Mailie Search really? Is pretty fast, and we boot it up and then re-index all the fixtures. It takes no time to boot up. It is not Elasticsearch, I will tell you that.
Okay. I've used Elastic, so.
Yeah, that is gnarly and slow. But we actually like run our index pages on the episodes page through Elasticsearch. We could hit the database or whatever, but since we have filters and search and all that, we just use Mailie Search as our main index for all the records. So we've just left it as a requirement. And it's fine in CI because we just run it as a Docker image and talk to that. But actually, we could just do the same thing in development and have the test helper on boot up start Mailie Search on a port and use the Docker container for it. That would work pretty easy, actually.
Yeah.
Try that.
The only reason I asked is because Jamie accidentally, nerd sniped me. He just put something in our Slack about our CI test time. And I'm responsible for the developer experience enhancements at Podia. And he typed that out. And then all of a sudden, the past few months worth of ideas on how to speed up the test suite started flooding into my brain. And I'm like, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. And I had 2 hours later, whatever. But some of our tests use render layout. And that requires the assets to be built.
Oh, sure.
That takes a lot of time.
What are you using for building assets?
Okay. It's not so much it takes a long time, but because we use parallelization, that build asset step happens on every test container. It's like we're splitting this across multiple containers. Every single test container that runs has to run this bundle, the build asset thing, which takes between 30 to 90 seconds for some reason. Because it has to run ESBuild, run SAS, blah, blah, blah. Understandable. I get that.
Yep.
But I don't get why we need to do it for our unit tests for the most part, right? Sure. If a container is just full of model tests, why should that be building the assets? So if I can take 30 to 90 seconds off of every test container that runs for every test suite, that's a decent chunk of time. That's a minimum going to drop at least 1 to 2 minutes off the entire CI, and 1 minute alone is a long time when you're talking about CI improvement.
Oh yeah, huge. There are tests in CI run and notice runs in 2 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes for Go Rails, I think, and Jumpstart's pretty similar. It gets to be queued up. That can take a few seconds or a minute or whatever, sometimes longer on GitHub. You give me 2 minutes to find a distraction and I will find a distraction. And I will lose my train of thought, what I was doing, what I was trying to get pushed to production and whatever. So saving that time is really valuable. A minute doesn't sound like a lot, but it is a lot. Really,
our test suite doesn't take 2 minutes. So yeah. I can't remember what it was when I first came to Podia, but I've dropped, I feel like it was like closer to like 11 or 12 minutes per run.
Yeah.
Maybe more than that when I first got there. I got it down to 6.
That's huge.
I think it's 6. 6 to 7. Sometimes it goes higher. I've seen it go up to 9 or 10, but it's usually around 6 or 7, especially on a warm cache, because I changed the way we were caching assets. Mm-hmm. And I also figured out yesterday a way we could do it even better, which is something else that I wanted to do, which now I remember. I asked about Meli Search, because I'm in that. I'm like, how do we lower the test suite? I was running test prof the other day just to see if anything easy was sticking out.
I don't know that you necessarily want to do this, but you could probably stub out the asset manifest or something, so it just pretends that there's whatever asset you ask for. Cool, here it is, and it's an empty file or empty string or something. It's possible you could cheat. Probably the controller tests, I would assume, have to ask for that, the asset manifest and stuff.
So I'm pretty sure that it only happens when you have rendered layouts on, and we only use it on some tests. So I think the first easy win is we use RSpec because we're cultured.
Yeah.
So just add an RSpec tag to those specific tests that need it and run them with the system test rather than the unit test. Because for the system test, I have it do the asset stuff already. Right. So that's fine. Go ahead, run there. The extra part, then there's no extra work. And then that's the first easy one. But then I also feel like I should be able to do a way better job of the assets aren't cached in GitHub Actions. I tried to do it once and I could not get it to work. Now, I can't remember. This might not still be true, but I think the problem was that every time you bundled, it generated a new fingerprint.
Ooh, that seems odd.
It was something weird. I don't understand why this is happening, but I think that was the issue. It almost seemed like there wasn't really a point to do it because it was going to try to do it anyway again. That might not be true. And if it's not true and I can push a commit and then I push another commit and the asset manifest key would stay the same, I could cache the assets in GitHub Actions and then run a function to like check whether it's going to be the same or not.
You could MD5 hash whatever it is and verify that it hasn't changed. That also could be something that has been fixed since you last looked into it. Yeah, accidentally, we were always updating the gem file lock or something whenever you run bundle, or there was a bug that caused that key to always be the current time or something.
Right.
Definitely seen that sort of thing happen before, and maybe that was happening and now it's fixed or something. And
you don't push your built assets. You always build them.
You would want it to compile the assets and then cache that so that you had a test of do my assets compile. Is Heroku compiling those? Or are
Heroku does
like
that. Nah, we don't. Heroku does it. So Heroku just wouldn't build.
Right. And it would be nice to know that it ran successfully in CI instead of learning later that the deployment failed. It'd be better to catch it earlier. So
yeah, that's true.
You could just add a separate step to like pre-compile the assets in your CI and then save that whatever cache key out of that. And then make that a GitHub action step, and then voila.
I could run it in a step before the system test. The system test job would rely on that job.
Yeah, because the system test will automatically compile the assets, and you don't have to do that as an earlier step, but then you wouldn't have a way to cache it or something, unless you like specified that in the config maybe, or did something more custom.
Yeah.
But at least you could add the pre-compile step ahead of time, and then hopefully the system test wouldn't be like, oh, let's blow it away and do it again.
You can manually create your cache keys, right? So like I could create the cache key based on the branch even.
Yeah.
So that would it make sure that on main, it always just go ahead and build the fresh one again.
That's something to be careful about too.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that will catch you very off guard and be very tricky to debug when it goes wrong, because you're like testing different branches and it's got different assets compiled for each one.
Yeah,
that is not a fun time, I will say.
The more we talk about this, the more I'm...
Well, it's probably why like it's just left as is, right? It is one of the hard problems, because if we assume everything is done from scratch every CI run, no issues, but it will be slower. Then we can introduce caching, but that causes problems sometimes if you aren't super thorough with what you're doing. So the trade-off there is, yeah, we may save a bunch of time in little increments every day on CI, but eventually we find a bug in it and waste days of our time. And it may not be worth the trade-off.
My life. I've been like obsessed with CI since I was at CodeFund. I love improving CI time. It's a really fun puzzle to me, but it is excruciating work. I know there's a way to test GitHub Actions locally, and I tried to do that the other day, bro, and I forgot how awful using Docker was. Docker is locking up my computer now for no reason. I can't quit it. I don't understand. Ugh, just forget it. I'm pushing it. I've spent way more time trying to do this. I would have figured this issue out by now by pushing it.
Let's take a second to thank our sponsor, Honey Badger. The number one reason startups fail is that they run out of money. There's so many ways for startups to lose money. Downtime should not be one. Recent studies found that downtime can cost $427 per minute for small businesses and up to $9,000 per minute for medium-sized businesses. That's every single minute. That's insane. A monthly subscription with Honey Badger helps you prevent costly downtime by giving you all the monitoring you need in one easy-to-use platform so you can quickly understand what's going on and how to fix it, which helps you stay in business. That is good. Best of all, Honey Badger is free for small teams and setup takes as little as 5 minutes. Get started today at honeybadger.io. That is www.honeybadger.io.
Literally just before we started recording, I was fiddling with taking the dev container setup for Jumpstart apps and it works pretty well, but Docker and concurrent Ruby triggers an issue that's patched in main in Ruby, but not in Ruby 3. Well, Ruby 3.3.1 has not been released with the fix yet. So whatever. It's not like M1 Max running concurrent Ruby will like segfault or something. Temporarily, I've changed our dev container configuration to just compile Ruby. But I went to boot up a code space and just waited for 15 minutes. Even though it's got like two CPUs and 8 gigs of RAM, it's not fast to compile Ruby. So I waited 10 or 15 minutes for the thing to boot up. And it's like the time improvement, if we just go back to Ruby 3.3, the Docker image that's pre-built is almost instant in comparison to booting up the dev container. And then the dev container documentation got moved from one repository to another or to multiple repositories in November 2023. So trying to reference stuff in there is very confusing. And then they're like nested Docker images. So the Microsoft Ruby 3.3 Debian Bookworm dev container is a wrapper around the Ruby Docker image, and then also adds these features which inject other Docker images into them. And it's got Ruby with RBM and then NVM and Node, which you can optionally install, but then there's no way to pass in arguments into that sub Docker image. So you can tell it which version of Ruby that you want. And there's docs there that say you can add arguments to tell it which version of Node you want. I haven't been able to figure out how to do that. At least NVM is there, so we could just use NVM as a command in our Docker container, but it's just way more complicated than it needs to be. It's just
a pain. Does it use like a Node version file? Oh, I guess how would it know about that Node version file when it's building the image to begin with? So never mind.
Yeah, you can add it to your own Docker image.
Yeah, but the whole point of using the Docker image is that I don't have to. I've pushed an image or two to Docker Hub, dude. I know all about that bull.
I avoided it like the plague because how much time do you spend fiddling with that? You wait 5 minutes for it to build an image, for it to fail, and then you don't have any good way of debugging things when it fails, and it just feels like a giant waste of time. And then Docker's just broken, and they haven't fixed any of that stuff for months and months and months. Okay, if you're on an Intel Mac, you've got to know to go uncheck these settings to get it to run. You don't have a lot of Intel Mac users? Can't you guys just fix this? What is going on? And there's no response from the Docker team on the issues and stuff. So drives me a little bit nuts. Not as nuts as I've seen DHH go on, bought a framework laptop, switched to Windows, switched to Android. DHH is...
switched to NeoVim.
Yeah!
I don't know if this is why, but ever since that happened, one of the maintainers of... yeah, he does work on the NeoVim. I think he created Telescope too. He published a really, really good starter config for NeoVim and explained, like, this is for you to like take and expand. And it's way more like documentation than it is actual configuration. And he's got a 30-minute YouTube video walking through it, showing you things, like explaining.
This You're going like, to find that.
I have it. I'll put a link to the show notes because I have like a little NeoVim config that I've built up after watching things. I use it for some things, but I just haven't fully committed. But after watching this video, I was like, I feel like I really could now.
Yeah, I spent a long time ago, quite a while, building my like Vim RC file and plugins and learning all the different settings and configs and got it pretty nicely to where I wanted it. And then probably haven't touched it for years since then. And I retried the VS Code NeoVim plugin and got that working pretty smoothly. Pretty happy with that. I feel like it's not exactly the same as what I have, but it is pretty darn good. And I'm very happy with being able to use VS Code a lot more now.
I use the regular Vim one, but what I've done, really taking a lot of inspiration for like the lazy NVim starter, is taking those noun, verb, leader key actions and using them in VS Code. So I hit space CA in VS Code, it opens the code actions for whatever I'm on. Taking those and bringing them into VS Code. But I haven't tried the NeoVim extension. I think someone like did have like a really bad review about it one time. And I was like, okay, I'll just use the regular Vim one.
I tried it a while back and nothing worked at all. Really? I couldn't type into the editor period or something. All right. Uninstall. I tried, followed all the instructions on the install and it didn't work. Then second time around works just fine. So I don't know.
Weird.
But yeah, speaking of all the containers and stuff, Raphael put together a Rails new repository, which is pretty cool. So first version is just a bash script that runs a Docker container that has Ruby and then installs Rails on it. And then whatever command you give to the container, it will just pass to Rails new. So you can be on Windows without anything but Docker installed and WSL, and then download this executable, which will run the Rails command, and then generate a Rails app, which you can open in VS Code then without installing Ruby or Rails on your machine at all. And then you can do development that way, which is freaking sweet. So it'll work the same way on Mac and Linux and whatever, because he's going to build this, rewriting it currently in Rust. So it'll be an executable you can download that you can just run on any system and then get up and running on Rails and have the latest version, Ruby and whatever else, in a Docker dev container. And you'll be off to the races, which is wild. So I think that'll be great for beginners getting into Rails going forward. Is something we talked about briefly at Rails World last year. And I'm glad to see he ran with it. The bash script was like 5 lines or something.
Dude,
like it was short.
A good bash script, man. I love them.
The Rust code coming from Ruby is quite different. It would be really cool if it was possible that that was written in Crystal so that it looked. I think they have a policy or something to not use Go at Shopify. Somebody said that. I can't remember. They use Rust
my brain.
A lot.
Yeah, but when you're writing like a CLI, a thing for like that, like Go is what people be using
I guess,
these days.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of Rust hate on Twitter right now. I'm anti-Rust at the moment.
Well, they're definitely strong into Rust because they're doing all the YJIT.
Yeah.
And everything.
I'm just curious about this anti-Go. I'm cool with Rust.
I don't know
I'm
if not... that was accurate, so okay, don't quote me on that.
Okay.
But
won't quote you. We'll ask some people. Have to know.
I'm not entirely sure if that's going to be added to the Rails dev container Dockerfile. But yeah, it uses the Microsoft dev container Ruby one the docs say you can pass in this argument to specify the node version, and that just doesn't work. And so you could probably build your, take the Microsoft dev container stuff, which is only a couple of lines because it just inherits from the Ruby image.
Right.
And you could probably use that yourself and basically fork it and use your own version of it. But I was trying to stick to close to the default Rails one as possible. So I don't know if in the future, maybe what'll happen is the dev container script, when it generates that, because it knows too if you specified,
could just build the images.
It knows if you specified Postgres or MySQL as your database, right. So it can add that service to the Docker Compose. So possibly that'll be something where it can, you specify dash dash CSS, ES build or whatever, and then maybe it can just pick those out. But I would like to move to the Tailwind CSS Rails gem at some point,
yeah,
instead of using it from the node package. What's cool about that, that also, just like SolidQ has a Puma plugin, someone added a Puma plugin for the Tailwind CSS Rails gem, which is sweet because then you don't have to run the extra process. And
that is really nice.
I have been wanting to do that for CSS and JS bundling, and hopefully someone else will get to it before I do, but that stuff would simplify life and not having to have bin dev and overmind and whatever else. You would just have these separate processes that the only one you're going to interact with is Rails. So if you had a way to run just Rails server and then binding IRB or the debug gem or whatever just worked, and you didn't have to have Foreman or overmind, we would be back to the simplicity of life before running these seven processes to run a Rails app. I would like to get back to that. Did you see Tailwind version 4's like alpha?
Yeah. Rust, brother.
I'm looking forward to the new Tailwind. I couldn't believe how fast it was. Well, there were incremental builds that he posted. The initial build was like 96 milliseconds for a project, but then it was nanoseconds, I think it was, or no, microseconds for the incremental builds or something. They were hella fast.
I haven't looked at it because I went through like a front end phase and I just was like, I'm so done. I just went as far deep into the back end as I possibly could. And instead of writing CSS in my fun time, I write bash in assembly.
In assembly, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I just write pure binary and just speak.
Do
it
those
to the
pull requests go over well at work? You're like, we're just going to shell out to assembly a script that I made.
Let's just say, you have any job? No, yeah.
I did see that 37 Signals posted another Rails developer opening today.
Really?
It's like 170K for their salary on that, which is not even a senior role, which is good.
Oh, that is good for not a senior role.
Yeah. It's cool to see. I hope that they keep growing and the community keeps growing and all that good stuff. Sounded like they were starting on the next Once product, and then Thruster got open sourced today, and I haven't looked at that, but it sounds like he's trying to push that as the default for, I don't entirely know if that's going to be just the default in a Kamal config or something that ships with Rails 8 or whatever, but you don't really need Thruster unless maybe they're also going to include some of that for local development, which would be cool, where you could say like run HTTPS for local dev or something. I know you can use Puma dev for SSL locally, but you also have to go jump through quite a few hoops on Linux and whatever else to get your certificates trusted and all that good stuff. At least it's a little easier on Mac and whatever, but yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily any related thing for development, but it'll do like a lot of what you would use Kaddy or Nginx or Apache for, serving files from Go super fast. Whatever else, I can't remember. SSL, it looks like it supports one single domain. I don't know if it'll support wildcards or...
Okay.
A lot of people run their app on multiple domains, you know?
Yeah.
Or you have like an app that is like Shopify where it's, we run a bunch of subdomains and alias them with custom domains. So those things may be just not in version one or something, but it's going to be sweet because it really kind of ties together all the like, you can deploy with Kamal, but you still need a web server in front, but now you can sort of just throw Thruster in front of Puma and more or less make Puma publicly, or just have a very lightweight thing in front of Puma instead of putting it up directly. And I know people do that Puma directly to the internet because it handles SSL certs and stuff, but I think the majority of people do not do that.
We used to use Caddy. We don't anymore, but we have a very... Podia is more like, we've got subdomains.
We've got the whole shebang,
dude. We got all of it. So
yeah, because our courses.gorails.com runs on Podia as a custom domain, but it's a subdomain of our domain. And then
But you could have had gorails.podia.com. That was what you had before you moved it to your own thing. Dude, like there's levels to this stuff. Like,
oh yeah. Well, and you want to keep that open, the subdomain running, so that in case the custom domain got screwed up, you still have access to your site and yada yada. Yeah, we've done a fair bit of that and making Jumpstart easy to handle those things and assign the current account correctly. Because what confuses people about multi-tenancy like that is they assume that, oh, I went to a subdomain, everything should be locked down to current account. Well, no. What if you're building a Shopify store? Then you want people to be able to access, or a Podia store.
A CMS side for
it's entirely
public side, yeah.
Exactly. And it's entirely specific to the application, not just something you can just say, oh, this is private. So maybe, yes, if you're building Slack and you want them all to be private, then accounts are treated that way. But it is up to you. And we don't know what you're building yet. So we can't presume these things. So yeah, it's fun.
Don't assume my multi-tenancy architecture.
Yes. There's something else I thought of I was wanted to talk about this week, but I don't know, man. This week has been a blur. We've been doing a bunch of updates, and Colin was doing an update that we had. This is something I've done for a long time. Shared partials in AppView's shared folder, and just that's the place where we put reusable things. Well, because we inherit from application controller, there's already a default location to do that, which is AppView's application. So this week, Colin made a PR to move all the stuff from shared over there so that you can just render shared anywhere, or render flash or whatever your partial is, navbar. And you can just say render navbar and it will just find it in application, because that is part of the lookup chain. And we've always had to specify render shared navbar and render shared whatever, shared footer, shared header, yada, yada. So it was a nice, well, this is more the way you want to do it in Rails. And we were looking at the Rails generators as well to see, what if we just had it Rails new create that directory and put a keep file in there, and then have that as a recommended location out of the box that people put those shared partials in or whatever, because that's where everything inherits from application controller. So that adds itself to the path. But it got me also wondering, is there an inherited callback or something that Rails looks at and builds up to generate the view path folders to find all those partials? Never actually looked into the internals of that stuff, but I think it was a great PR that you made to Jumpstart to just sort of clean it up, where it's like, there's already a shared location for this because all of our controllers inherit from application. So we might as well just use that.
That's genius. I hate to talk and go, but I have to ship something and it's Friday afternoon. My project partner's back, so I'm going to have to transition here a whole new context.
Get it out. Don't look at the bug. Don't look at the issues that come in after you deploy it.
What issues?
Exactly.
Wow. And you're assuming I would write a bug? That's crazy.
Not if you wrote Rust.
That's true. All right.
All right, man. Enjoy your weekend. Good luck with the deploy. We'll talk to you next week.
I will see you then.
Later.